You're listening to the Full and Thriving Podcast, a place where courageous women come to break free from food obsession, heal their relationship with their body, and strive to live a life that's present, lighthearted, and meaningful. If you're listening, my wish is that this podcast serves as a catalyst that inspires you to nourish your body, nurture your mind, and energize your spirit. I'm your host, Meg McCabe, a certified life coach and eating disorder recovery coach with a PhD in having a good time. Just kidding about that last part. Anyway, thank you so much for listening and enjoy the show. Today's guest is the one, the only Anne Claire Young-Jae-Chalk, a CCI certified recovery coach, yoga teacher, and the co-founder of the Recovery Collective with me. She's also my co-host of the YouTube show, The Meg and Anne Claire Show, which I highly recommend you subscribe to if you haven't already. If you don't know Anne Claire, today's the day. She is my beloved work wife and friend, and in this episode, we chat all about how to travel in recovery, covering the tips and strategies to turn your next vacation into an opportunity for healing. Throughout this episode, we mention the upcoming Recovery and Beyond retreat in Portugal that we are hosting in June. If you want more information about this, please check out the link in the show notes or reach out to either of us on Instagram, and we'd love to chat with you about it. So, without further ado, here's this week's episode of the show. Hello, hello, Anne Kling. How are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing so good. This is really strange to actually be recording a podcast with you today because I'm so used to recording YouTube videos with you every week.
I know. I'm like, oh, today I can look like crap and no one's going to give a damn. I'm just kidding.
This is true. We do not have the pressure of the YouTube video camera today.
I mean, to be fair, it matters for my background. I do sometimes overthink the fact that I'm like in one room or in another room, but basically, I mean, I'm still myself.
That's all I care about. That's all I want. And it's such a nice thing to have my recovery coach, BFF, co-founder of the Recovery Collective, and European soul sister on with me today. I don't know if anybody listening today knows this, but Anne Claire is all of those things to me and more. And if you don't know anything about Anne Claire, please listen to episodes 34 and 70 because I've had her on the podcast two other times previously. And Anne Claire, you are actually the first person to make it on the show for a third time.
I am so honored. Thank you.
Well, I'm honored to have you. And I guess to start, I know I shared a little bit about you already, but I'd love for you to share a bit about your background and who you are.
Sure. So my name's Anne Claire Young-Jae-Chalk. I'm a CCI certified eating disorder recovery coach. I'm also a registered yoga teacher. I am the co-founder of the Recovery Collective, as you've already said, and the co-host of the Meg and Claire show on YouTube. So that's who I am currently and the different roles and, you know, hats that I wear. And before that, I was basically in business and finance, but that's clearly a world that I have left behind. Although my organizational bits and that side is still very present, and like that contributes to my role when it comes to the Recovery Collective bits and bobs, because I feel comfortable around those topics. And I know you don't like them so much.
What are you talking about? I have no idea what you're saying. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, it's so nice to have someone who's like the yin to my yang in business and in the Recovery Collective, because I remember just having you join when we first started and thinking I had everything like detailed and ready to go. And then you were like, hey, Meg, where are the details? What you say you're going to post on Facebook every week, what posts? And I was like, oh.
And then you had to be faced with the realities of Anne Claire loving Excel spreadsheets and sending you things with like a bajillion tabs and like massive files with columns and lines and colors. And
I loved it. I have learned a lot from you. And again, I just love that you're that kind of detail-oriented machine helping move things along in the collective. So anyway,
please know that I've learned so much from you too. And really funny, because I really do consider you to be the yin to my yang too. Like, pretty sure I've said this already, but like, I feel like you're really like the sunshine person and I'm like the little moon person. And there's this fit because we're so dissimilar in certain ways. And then we still click because we align on some fundamentals so, so very much too. And I feel so, so lucky that we bumped into each other a few years ago.
Yes. Oh my gosh. And we found each other on Instagram, which is pretty funny.
Yeah.
I thought you were someone who needed recovery support. I was like, who is this girl who keeps messaging me? She must need recovery support.
Nope. I was just that weirdo.
I love it. Oh my gosh. And now I'm imagining myself buying you a cool like yin and yang 90s necklace that we could wear as like a friendship necklace on our retreat.
That would be so cute.
I'm going to look those up online and see what I can do. But anyway, that brings me to our topic today, because another part about you, Anne Claire, that I love is that you're the one who really brought retreats into the Recovery Collective, and you expanded my life into more travel because of that. And so I figured you'd be the best person possible to talk about related to travel and recovery and how listeners can manage like working on recovery while traveling and all the tips and tricks around that. So that's what we're all talking about today. And I'm really curious, before we dive into all of that, what is your favorite part about traveling as a recovered person? Because you have lived experience with an eating disorder, and we're going to hear a little bit more about that in a minute. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious about what you love about traveling now that it's back to being fully healed?
So it's a really hard question, I'm not gonna lie, because I feel like saying everything, but at the same time, that's really how it is. Like, traveling now back to being exciting and fun and something that I truly look forward to, something that I can really turn into what it is that I need, right? Because when I say exciting, I don't mean by that that it always has to be like a fun-filled, like active vacation. What I mean by that is I'm always looking forward to being there, whether that's because it is fun and it's active and I'm visiting like a new country or doing a new hike or something like that is adventurous, I guess, but also because sometimes it's the opposite of that. It is very restful and I'm able to be like, oh, I'm so longing for, I don't know, that week off of rest and relaxation and lounging and being a lizard in the sunshine or whatever. So yeah, I love discovering new cultures. Like, I'm that person that's going to be in the museums and in the restaurants. That's where you will find me when I'm visiting new places. And I love being able to do that in a completely free and flexible way and really match what I need, even on a given day. Like, I'm being like, oh, I feel like doing this or I feel like doing that. And I mean, we'll get to that, but I really appreciate the ability to really understand what my needs are, what I truly want. Oh my God, like, what do you want? Question that I used to hate in recovery. And now that I love, because I'm like, oh my God, I can totally tell you what I want. And also I love the fact that I can go on vacation without feeling that pressure that I need to fix my body in any kind of way before I'm away, especially when we're talking about, you know, vacationing into the sun, where you're going to be wearing different types of clothing and maybe doing different kinds of activities. That's something that I used to be so scared of that I would just not even show up for them. So anyway, I'm already skipping probably a few questions.
Hey, that is okay. I think that's something that so many folks think about is, like, okay, I have this vacation coming up. I'm really nervous about how I'm going to look in photos and, you know, what I'm going to wear. And I need to feel like my skinniest in order to have fun. And that's just a mindset that I'm sure we will be debunking a little bit as we move along today. but I'm curious, when you were living with your eating disorder, how was travel different? Like, what was it like for you? And do you have any stories or examples of the struggles you experienced while traveling?
Yeah, many. And because I'm going to try to use polite words, I'm going to say that it was really crap, to not use any worse expression, but it really sucked. It was really not fun. And that was true both for traveling on my own and traveling with others for different reasons. But like traveling on my own, to an extent, for a while, I would just care a bit less about, you know, how rigid I was or how I had different rules about how I had to move or what I had to do, like the conditions to eat or like hyper planning, like an attention given to how special the food had to be or whatever. But then, like, honestly, some of my worst memories are from traveling with others. And I don't know why. I have a lot of them in Paris, which is a real shame because Paris is an amazing city. But I guess it's because Paris is very close by for me living in Belgium. But I remember, because you asked memories, right? So I remember this one time being in Paris with my parents, my brother, and our partners. And it was for my brother's birthday. So it was an entire weekend. We were in Paris, so like 3 nights. And obviously, it was meant to be fun. It was definitely going to be filled with social eating and just occasion upon occasion, right? For connection and food occasions, which scared the absolute bejesus out of me. Like, a lot of factors combined together to really turn that into one of my worst ever weekends, because I ended up being horribly stressed out, anxious. I had planned exactly when I was going to eat, where I was going to eat, what I had to do before, what I had to do after. We even had like plans to go and visit certain museums, and I was so high strung that I couldn't deal with anything that was changing the plans, even by 5 minutes. Like, I got into a horrible argument with my dad. He showed up like 5 minutes late to a thing, and his phone died and didn't have a battery, and I was an absolutely horrible version of myself. And the worst thing is, I knew as I was in the moment how this was unlike me, and I hated being that version of me, but I was just so unable to cope with changes in plans or things that weren't going like they were, quote unquote, supposed to go. And, you know, I could see in his eyes, like, the questioning, like, the what is going on? Like, why on earth are you so angry and stressed out about just me showing up a bit late and my phone being dead? Like, nothing that major has happened. But I really didn't have the ability anymore at that point in time to cope with changes in plans, spontaneous things. Like, that was completely outside of my range of abilities. And to be honest, it's a memory that really stuck with me for so long. I had the hardest time being at peace with that memory because I really felt like I was one of the worst versions I've ever been of myself to someone else that I obviously love very much. And then the other, like, much lighter memory that I have, but also recovery related, it was ED and recovery related. So that other memory is also in Paris, but it was a lesson. Like, it was one of those moments where I finally understood what my therapist was talking about. Because that time I was on my own and I was trying, you know, to sort of have a good time. And I remember my therapist trying to make me understand that I was a very black and white thinker, that I was still very rigid. And I was like, no, that's not true. Like, I'm much more flexible than I used to be. And that's what I kept telling myself until I go to Paris. I'm, you know, having my little day as I had planned, but not too precisely, right? Because I'm quote unquote flexible now. And except I wasn't, and I was still like filled with rules and things I had to do first and whatever. Anyway, I go to this one specific place in Paris called Angelina. They have a very like delicious like hot chocolate there and very well-known like pastries. And there's this one pastry that is like the like thing to get there. And I go there, I'm like, see, how amazing am I? I am going to go and get myself a pastry. I go and get it. I go out and I go to, basically, there's like a little park right next to it. So I go to the park, I'm going to sit on a bench and have it. I take one bite and I'm like, holy crap, I hate this.
Oh no. Classic eating disorder situation.
And I got so annoyed. Like, I had a proper meltdown on my own on that bench because I hated what I had just bought. And I was angry because I had spent the money. I was angry because I had planned. I had made space in my, you know, allowance and what I had given myself permission for. And I was, oh my God, that was not good. But at the same time, you know, I came back home. I went to see my therapist. I was like, yeah, I got it. I am not flexible. I am still rigid. I still have issues, clearly. I got the example of how I had like put so many conditions, basically, because I had done some, you know, recovery work, but I still had like conditions about food has to be perfect. It has to be worth it, like in terms of like money spent on it and in terms of calories. And I mean, yeah. So I guess the universe heard the fact that I needed a lesson and just like served it on a nice platter. But yeah, that was another standout memory of traveling and being not really quite enjoying it in a way that I could have, I guess. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, that's just what it was. And, you know, I did the work to not let that be a thing for too long. But yeah. Not fun. Traveling with an eating disorder is not fun.
It sounds like it was not fun for you at all. I didn't do so much traveling with my eating disorder because I was younger and in high school, but I definitely have memories of feeling a lot of food guilt on trips and feeling like I, quote, overdid it or overate because I was going out to eat so much. So for me, it was a lot of like, trying to cope with all of the guilt and shame around eating more and feeling overly full and coping with fullness and having tummy aches and all of that.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? And for me, that really translated into me being horribly anxious, horribly irritable, like, and being really mean to others when I was with others. And yeah, my poor dad just like, he was really like so confused about what was happening. Because personally, in my story, my parents didn't know that I was struggling at the time. So obviously, like, he was just, like, so confused about what was going on. But yeah, my heart still, like, contracts and is a bit tight when I remember that moment. I mean, we're good. My dad and I are very cool. Like, actually, we traveled in December together to New York. And that was a lot of fun. So I'm glad that I've done the work in a way that has allowed me to sort of have a lot of corrective experiences since then, especially with the humans that I feel like I hurt at the time. But yeah,
yes.
That was hard.
Oh my gosh. So what is travel like for you now that you're fully recovered? You mentioned traveling with your dad again. That must have felt like a reclamation of your true self and of travel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's fundamentally different. Like I said earlier, it's needs-based and filled with excitement. So it's really based on what do I want to do? What do I want to experience? What do I need? And so, for example, when we were in New York in December, it was really based on the very simple observation that my dad and I both love jazz. And he had never experienced going to any jazz club in New York. And I had years ago because I used to go there a lot for work. And I just really wanted to experience that with him. I just wanted to have that memory. And that was enough to, because, you know, I'm privileged enough to be able to make that choice. But that was enough for me to be like, you know what, I'm going to make that happen because we can. And when we were there, it was so nice to know that all that matters is that I'm there with my dad and we're having a good time and we'll wake up and we'll see what we feel like doing and we'll grab breakfast wherever it is that we want to grab breakfast and we'll grab lunch wherever we feel like having lunch instead of being this extremely rigid person that can only go to that place because I've researched extensively all the places and I've decided that either that place has safe enough foods or this place is worth it or whatever, right? Like all those conditions that I had to meet that were making everything so stressful. Now, when they're not there, I can just show up. I can just be present instead of being stuck in my head thinking about, you know, all the rules and all the have-tos and should-dos and whatever. And also, I did not pack anything to like do any sort of movement or something. Like that used to be part of my patterns. I did not give a damn about packing, like, you know, any sort of like gear to. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to be like walking, getting on the metro, sitting, doing whatever. And that's nice. It just sits with you in such a different way. It's hard to express really like what that means, but to a big extent, vacations feel like a very soulful experience now, mm-hmm. whereas they felt like a performance that I could fail at in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel the same way about travel. Travel now is so soulful because you're able to relax into yourself and almost express your true nature through the activities you decide to do, the food you order, the streets you walk down, the shops you like purchase little gifts in. It's just such a soulful experience to learn about yourself and feel into who you are. So I love that. And one question I have for you that I actually did not plan to ask you is, what has been your favorite meal you've had traveling recently? Because I'm having some memories of food come up from our trip to Portugal and Lisbon last year. But I'm curious, because you're going all over the place. You and Stephen are big foodies. What has been the best meal you've had?
Oh my God, that is such a hard question.
What comes to mind? It doesn't have to be the best. But one
I'm not going to lie. One thing that comes to mind is something that I made sure that you would try when we were in Lisbon. And it's those, you know, those barbecue scallops with the black, like garlic butter and the algae dish. That place, that specific place I've gone to for years, and it's really their specialty dish, like their signature dish. And I just really love it.
I was thinking of the same exact dish. I was dreaming of those scallops while you were talking. They're served in their little shells still, which I had no idea scallops come in shells. Usually I just get them out of the shell, like seared and with butter or like risotto or something like that. And so I absolutely love that meal. It was amazing. We definitely have to go back.
We will. I mean, literally every single person that asks me, do you have tips for Lisbon? I'm like, yes, number one, this restaurant. Number two, the rest. But yeah, it's just amazing. I will say in London, because I was in London in November, there's this one restaurant, or actually they have a few, and they're called Dishoom. They're Indian restaurants. So good. So good. Like really delicious. I love them so much that I bought the cookbook from the restaurant and brought it back home. So, you know, if that's not a show of love, I don't know what is. And we have actually used a cookbook, you know, so it's not one of those situations where I buy something and I'm like, well, that looks cute on the shelf. So that would be one of the other highlights of the last year, because I hadn't been in London for a good few years. And those are my old stomping grounds, because I studied in London for a semester. So it's always special to go back. And I was really excited to go back to Dishoom and just have that food. As I'm talking, I just have like so many more ideas coming up to my mind, but I should probably stop because I'm just going to end up talking about food for the next hour.
No, me too. I feel myself getting pulled into that conversation. I think food is my favorite part about travel completely. Like that is what excites me. It's like the flavor bombs that await me.
And this is the thing about, you know, this ability to be so very flexible. I have gone back to being able to travel and go to a random restaurant where I might not even be able to read the menu because it's in a foreign language that I don't have a lot of reference point for. And I say that because I speak four languages, so I can sometimes like still understand somewhat menus, but sometimes I just don't at all. And I'll just be like, you know what? Just give me whatever you think is the best. Like, or here's what I typically like. You give me whatever you want. That has led me to experience culture through the food in a different way, but also people love it when you do that, because I often end up having a conversation with someone where they tell me this is my grandma's dish, or this is the dish from where I come from, and it's not this region, it's that region of the country, and this is what I love about it, or this is how I changed it. And then suddenly you're having such an amazing conversation with someone that you would not have had you been so strict and fearful, you would have probably not ended up being in that place because you wouldn't have been able to pick from the menu, or you would have started listing out exactly what you wanted. And, you know, they would probably not have felt as appreciated. And yeah, it's just, there really is such a thing as a conduit, right, for true connection and cultural discovery in food.
Absolutely. I completely agree. That is one of the biggest gifts, I think, of recovery, is that freedom and flexibility to trust the cultural dishes and just say, like, I want to be a part of this cultural experience and go for it. Every single country I went to last summer when I was in Europe, I went on a food tour and I would book a full day or a full afternoon of multiple dishes in the city. Like, I did that in Lisbon, and we were having dishes that were local to Lisbon. We were having African dishes. It was like all over the place with what we were having, but they were all like either in famous restaurants in the area or little street food like stands.
But then again, right, if you're in Lisbon, right, and you're experiencing food that is from Africa, actually what you're experiencing is history, because yep. you're going to have the specific countries that are linked to Portugal for historical reasons. And then suddenly you can really, you know, an experience that is deeper, you know, because of everything that it encompasses. Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to add to this, like, food thing as we travel and recovery, because for me personally, there was very much a reflection in my relationship with money that, you know, I could find mm-hmm. in my relationship to food. And it really was key to heal both. And I mean, to an extent, they were very linked and intertwined. So doing the work on one helped to do the work on the other, but has truly shifted in a way where, to an extent, I would use money as an excuse in recovery, right? And that would sound okay mm-hmm. and acceptable and reasonable, right? To be savvy and not spend too much money on certain things, when that was actually rooted in fear and in rigidity and punishment to an extent. Whereas now, you know, when we travel and we try all the dishes, you know what? Every once in a while, you're going to be served something and you're going to be like, you know what? This is really not for me. You know, I've had that happen, right? If someone serves me like tripes or like, you know, different pieces, for example, of food that I just don't like so much, I'm also not going to torture myself to eat it. You know, that example from Paris, you know, that pastry yeah. that I didn't like. I had to learn that it was okay to have spent a bit more money on a thing and then be like, you know what? I don't like it. I'm going to go get up and go and get another one, because I deserve to experience pleasure from the food that I eat. And I don't have to force myself to eat a food that I don't like. And I also don't need to be angry at myself because I bought something I don't like. Of course, I can't do that all the time because, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. But also, this intensity has disappeared. Yeah. And it makes the possibility of the experience fundamentally different.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost like, notice when your eating disorder is using money as a reason not to eat something or not to try something or to restrict. But also recognize you're allowed to give yourself more food or buy a different dish just so you can have that experience that you were really excited to have. Really good point. I feel like money and eating disorders is another topic we should talk about on our YouTube channel at some point, because that we could dive into that too. But okay, so I know you have come here chock full of tips and strategies for traveling in recovery for all of the listeners. And I would love to hear you share, maybe one by one, some of your top tips that you give your clients.
So the umbrella tip, well, first of all, let me start with, this is going to vary based on where you are in recovery and what you're specifically working on, right? So, you know, obviously take what fits and throw away what doesn't apply to you. But the umbrella sort of like tip is plan with your treatment team.
Oh, a different kind of planning.
Yes, a different kind of planning, but one that really matters. Because honestly, every other tip that I have sort of fits in there because it's prepared. And what I mean by plan is prepare yourself for the traveling. Honestly, I would start with, how are you going where you're going? I know that sounds like such a weird question, but are you road tripping? Are you getting on a plane? And where are you going to eat? When are you going to eat? How are you going to make sure that you have what you need to eat? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the number one thing, like that was first step. Every time I was talking last year to clients that were joining us on our retreat, for example, we were talking about, okay, step one, you're packing your stuff. You're getting to the airport. What time is it? Where are your snacks? When are your meals happening? Where are you going to grab the things that you need? Because you're going to have to make sure that you continue to consistently and adequately feed yourself, right?
That's so true, because I've heard stories of my clients or folk who have been sick with an eating disorder, essentially just forgetting to pack snacks or avoiding snacks and meals altogether while they're traveling, as if those days don't count.
Exactly. This is because I used to do that. I used to go on road trips and I'd be like, this is how many hours we have. And then I would pack like specific foods that my eating disorder had said, those are the only acceptable options that you can have. And that has to last you until you're on the other side. You cannot buy anything else, because you cannot spend money on anything else. And also, it's not going to be worth it and blah, 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 blah. Nuh-uh, we're not doing that. And we're also not doing the thing where you get stuck in a traffic jam. Then what? Mm-hmm. You know, things can happen. Your plane can get delayed. What happens then, right? It's not just about saying I plan so that I would have just about what I need, or I count on what they're going to serve me on the plane, for example. It is I'm getting extra snacks because maybe I'll get extra hungry. When we travel, we could get a bit tired. A normal reaction to being tired is needing a little bit extra food. There's nothing wrong with that. It's actually a very like body functioning response to actually feed ourselves a little bit more. What happens if your plane gets canceled? Like what happens if, I don't know, there's turbulence during the flight and they don't serve the food on the flight anymore? Then you're stuck with whatever you have in your hand luggage, right? So I like to really start with, how are we moving to the destination?
Yes. And can I add to that? If you are road tripping with a group of people and for some reason they are not stopping for snacks or lunch or whatever it is, you can be the person who says, hey, can we stop to pick up some food? Hey, can we stop? I'm hungry. I need a snack. It's okay to be that person. Usually that's very welcomed. Other people are thinking the same thing. And it's a good practice in using your voice and advocating for your needs. I feel like some people are too afraid to speak up when they're traveling. And I just want to give everyone permission to do that.
And, you know, this is why it's so important to be like, okay, how do I get there? Who's with me? What am I going to do? Also, if no one else wants to eat a snack and you're in the car and that's part of your goals or your plan, then you need to make sure that you've maybe dialogued or challenged the thoughts that you expect are going to come up when you pick up, you know, your snack from your bag because mm-hmm. you're having to eat. And the same thing actually applies to where is it that you're staying? Right. So I often go with like, okay, second step, where are you staying? Are you in a hotel? Are you in a bed and breakfast? Are you in an apartment that you've rented? What is that going to mean when it comes to the consequences on, you know, your control over your food options? Because that's going to impact how you can plan, how you can buy, how you can eat. And that matters. And if you're in recovery, make your life easier, right? Like think about it ahead of time so that when you're there, you're reducing the number of choices that you have to do. Why? Because we know that emotions are probably already going to be higher, right? Like what something that's really hard when we're traveling with an eating disorder, and still true when we're in recovery, obviously, is that I find that we get really irritable and stressed out and anxious real fast because we're not in our usual environment, because things change faster than they do when we're at home, right? Where it's required from us to be more spontaneous. We're going to be eating out probably more than usual. So plan the things, make the decisions ahead of time. So if you know you're in an apartment, for example, that you've rented out with your family, say, then you can make sure that you know where the grocery shop is, and you know that maybe on the first day that you're staying, you're going to go with your family to the grocery store, and you're going to make sure that you have the foods that you need, because you know you're going to have, I don't know, your breakfasts at home before the day starts. And you know that you can also buy extra snacks that you can make sure you have in your bag as you move around and visit, I don't know, the towns and whatever, the region that you're staying in. plan in this way because this is supportive of your recovery.
I love that. And can I add, it's a very cool experience to go to a grocery store in a new country. They organize it differently. You'll see all the crazy, weird foods and snacks. You're like, what is this? What is this? I have no idea. I can't even read what's on the labels. And so it is a really fun way to dig deeper into the culture. It's one of the first things I do whenever I go to a new city is stock up my mini fridge or kitchenette or whatever I have with little snacks, some breakfast options, things that I can have throughout the week, because I do not want to be stranded hungry. Never. That is like nobody's favorite thing.
And by the way, this can be a fun way to also set a goal, right? Maybe you're working on variety with your dietitian lately. And so you can set a fun goal that you're going to go to the grocery store and you're going to grab a snack you've never seen before and you'll try it out. And that can really be an opportunity as much something that's only stressful and confusing. And you know, sometimes you're going to end up in situations where all of the food is taken care of for you. So like, for example, on our retreat, right, people don't have to take care of food. We take care of the food. And so, you know, it's good for people to know because then they're like, oh, then my job is to inform the people if I have specific, you know, dietary concerns or like, you know, needs and whatnot, because obviously we can accommodate. And that's nice because then it's like, oh, okay, so what is it that I need to make sure that I'm taking responsibility for? What is it that I maybe want to make sure that I do if someone else is already planning all the things? What is that going to mean for me? And the questions, right, that you're asking yourself are different if you are in this kind of a scenario or if you're in a scenario where you end up eating out a lot, in which case you have to ask yourself, how will I be making my choices when I eat out? How will I make that tolerable? How will I make sure that I'm not compensating when that happens? And it could mean more or less planning, right? For me personally, in my recovery, I had to learn to not plan where I was going to go and eat. But sometimes, you know, that's not realistic from the get-go. Maybe the first step is to say, I know the options close to, I don't know, the apartment that I'll be staying at with my friends, and I can check out in advance some of the menus of the restaurants, and I can make sure that I know what are choices on there that are recovery appropriate. And then that can be helpful because, you know, you have to meet yourself where you are. Maybe for where you are, going for full spontaneity and seeing what happens when you get to the place and you receive a menu, maybe that's too much because that's going to make you compensate ahead of time and negotiate on the other things. Maybe you are far enough in recovery where that's literally the goal, to not look at things too much and to show up and sort of practice that spontaneity and that flexibility as you go. So see where you are and make sure that you're meeting yourself with realistic and compassionate goals.
Such good advice. I love that so much. I think it's so important to be able to recognize kind of where you are in your own healing journey and meet your needs however that looks for you. And that's why I think having a team is so important, because you can talk to them about what's the most supportive way for you to not let this vacation be an opportunity for you to slip back, but perhaps an opportunity to actually move forward and make recovery progress.
Yeah. And I would include in that, am I traveling with recovery allies, like someone who can be an accountability buddy? Or am I traveling with people who are actually the opposite of that and that are highly triggering, maybe, right? Unfortunately, sometimes we travel with people who are going to be on the more triggering side of things. And that's going to mean that maybe you need to consider practicing setting boundaries, right, with those people. But on the opposite of that, sometimes you're going to be traveling with people who you can count on to help you with the recovery steps to make progress. And I know for a fact that last year when we were on our retreat, we had humans literally be each other's accountability buddies. And so we would have like people being like, okay, so you plate my plate tonight and you plate something that is balanced and adequate for me. Because as we know, we are very good at bringing up, you know, that healthy voice, that part of us that shows up for others and wants us to heal. But when it comes to ourselves, it's kind of tricky to apply to things. And so they were literally using each other's healthy selves and voices to help them, like, each other out. And that was the nicest thing to see. Or I know that some people were like meeting up for snacks or meeting up for like this kind of a like a drink or whatever. And I was like, oh, that is so awesome, because they were obviously in a setting where literally everyone was an ally. And I know that that's not applicable for everyone, but, you know, try to figure out what that could mean for you.
I love that. Made my heart feel so warm and fuzzy when I found out people on the retreat were becoming accountability buddies and allies with each other, and like letting their voice be kind of the healthy voice for their friends on the trip. So that was so cute. And I love that little story. Do you have any other tips or strategies? You've shared so many.
I would say, like, depending on, you know, what your behaviors are, make sure that's met with adequate planning or questioning beforehand, right? For me personally, I had to make sure that I was clear with myself in terms of what movement was okay or not okay, or how did I need to intentionally reduce it? Like, literally, I had to ask myself the question, how can I take the bus? How can I take the metro? How can I be okay with taking a cab instead of making myself walk from point A to point B? That was my responsibility, because that was part of my patterns, and that might not be part of yours, but if that is the case, make sure that those questions are being asked. Or, for example, like, movement can also show up in like getting up extra early and, you know, doing certain things. It's like, maybe I need to make sure that I keep myself accountable here as well. And that can look like making plans with someone to have breakfast or whatever, right? So depending, make sure that you include that in there. And I also always like to ask, like, okay, let's say we're not planning things. What's the first thing that's going to go out the window?
Great question.
That way we know, we can all call ourselves out when we have certain patterns that come up a lot. We know what's really hard. We know how our eating disorder is going to show up. So I like to make sure that question's asked at some point, just so that we're extra sure that we've covered everything.
Right. Like, in what way is our eating disorder going to try to compensate? If we're giving ourselves permission to eat the food, how is the eating disorder going to, let's say, or hijack the situation or make it so the integrity of the challenge is kind of tarnished, right? So, really good answers. And I have to share also, or bring up, because you brought this up earlier, I want to make sure we close the loop. You mentioned not dieting before a trip. Like, what are your thoughts on that? Like, for people who are tempted to maybe try to lose weight before they travel, like, what words of wisdom do you have for them?
I mean, I would start with meet yourself where you're at. Write down the logic. Write down all of the reasons that voice in your head is telling you you have to, because this is why you should fix your body first. This is why you should lose the weight. Write it all down. That allows you and your team to meet you exactly where you're at. And that allows you to know what it is that you need to start challenging. Because it could be so many different things. It could be only this kind of a body has the right to wear that kind of, you know, style of clothes, or only this kind of a body is an appropriate body on the beach, or this kind of a body is the only kind of body that can do this kind of activity. You might notice that there are certain beliefs or thoughts there that need changing, and that's not going to be done in one go, right? So please take this like at a reasonable pace. So, I mean, start as early as you can, bringing up these things with your team, not last minute before you go on a trip. But really start gently, but honestly, challenging whether or not those things are true and how they can sometimes be true, because society is effed up and has loud opinions. And we are shoved those opinions in our faces every year when summer rolls in. We get all those reminders that there's a certain kind of body that we should have by the summer or whatever. So, you know, be gentle with yourself. It's normal that you've picked up on those beliefs. And I will say that depending on the body that you are in or that you're recovering into, that will be fundamentally different, because we cannot pretend that it's going to be the same to have that conversation, you know, for someone that is in a larger body or someone that is in a conventionally and socially acceptable body. And yet everyone deserves to have that conversation, and everyone deserves to find some level of okay. And at the end of the day, I really wish that it were true that everyone could know and experience that they have the right to do the things that they want to do, regardless of the shape that they're in, the body that they're in, and the kind of clothes that they quote unquote can wear or think they should wear or should not wear or whatever. But, you know, step by step.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's such a helpful reminder to everyone. And I'm hopeful that folks can, you know, do that this summer upon, you know, before all of their travel happens, just recognize they deserve to experience life fully, no matter what size body they're in or recovering into. So yeah.
I want to say, like, I just want to add a little thing, because there's often this, because we're kind of talking about body image here, right? And often in recovery, or when we suffer from an eating disorder, we basically swing from one extreme to the other. We're either hyper aware of our body, or we're hyper avoidant of our body. You know, it's like, I refuse to be in pictures. And at the same time, I'm body checking 50 times a day. I'm both hyper avoidant and hyper aware. And sometimes, you know, I'm giving two examples, and that can look like many different things. But it does mean that it may require for us to both learn how to not be so hyper aware when it comes to the body check-in, while also making sure that we can hang out with our bodies, right? Because the point isn't, you know, to go from one extreme to the other. And often I have these conversations with clients where, you know, what we realize is that they're in a situation where they've been avoiding, you know, their own reflection and their own physical presence, because they've been trying so very hard to stop feeding their eyeballs with information, because their brain then attaches really harsh meaning to, you know, what they're seeing, which then pushes their buttons internally. And those triggers turn into behaviors. And that's good, right? For, to an extent, it is important to reduce body check-in. It is important to not make, you know, our physical presence the center of our attention, like the number one thing that we're focused on throughout the day and in our lives. But we also cannot experience life fully if all that we do is avoid our physical presence. And so if that's like tickling your brain, you know, if those words are sort of like resonating with something inside of you, please make sure that you're learning to spend time with your physical presence in a way that feels somewhat compassionate, somewhat neutral, somewhat caring, because if not, it's going to be really, really hard, right, to end up doing the things that we're talking about and engaging in those activities. And the last note I want to say is that please, you know, make sure that those goals that are related to, for example, being comfortable enough to wear a swimsuit, right, and going to the beach. I really want for everyone to be able to experience this. I really want for everyone to be able to go to the beach and just enjoy a day at the beach, because it can be such a lovely thing. At the same time, you know, if you have been avoiding going to the beach fully for like, I don't know how many years, don't, you know, set as a goal, well, this year I'm just going to go, and then the first day I'm going to go and the beach is full of people. Be cool with yourself, right? Goals and, you know, vacation dreams, they might not happen this very first time that you finally go on a vacation again. And it's okay that it's a step-by-step thing. I'm in Europe, so it sounds like I was vacationing a lot. I wasn't. I was just going to the neighboring countries.
Yeah, it's but, like me going to New York City.
Right. But, you know, I had to take it step-by-step too. I didn't jump from, you know, having a really hard time being horribly irritable and very rigid to feeling fully free. And it's okay to stick step by step as you consider what your vacation plans are. Please let your dreams influence your goals, but don't let them be expectations that are then used by your eating disorder to hit you on the head, because that felt really hard or inaccessible, right? So right. I just want to make sure that we're not setting goals that are simply not realistic, and right. It's okay that things take time.
Thank you, Anne Claire, for that. I love all of those tips. I'm hoping everyone here is just getting excited for their travel plans and learning that they do not have to be so disempowered around travel. They can actually use it as an opportunity to heal, which I love. But I did really want to ask you about retreats because you are kind of the mastermind behind the Recovery Collective retreat. How can going on a retreat benefit someone in their healing?
Well, I'm going to answer that question with, you know, the reference point of our retreats. Because, you know, when you say our retreat, there are so many different kinds of retreats. So I don't know if it's fair to answer on behalf of all of the existing potential retreats in the world. And to an extent, I want to tell people, like, when I'm answering this question, I'm relaying the feedback that I've received from participants to previous retreats. And I can say that many humans were able to experience genuine support and progress and community. And many of them have expressed how it was the first time that they were able to experience a sense of vacationing, but that was super supportive. I also know many of them were able to challenge things because the environment was so supportive, because they were surrounded by allies and by coaches who are specifically trained to be there for them and help them out. And every single workshop, every single conversation was nourishing for their soul, for their healthy self. And so it was basically being on the retreat, on such a retreat, like a recovery retreat, like the ones that we organize. It is like giving your healthy self, that part of you that wants to heal, the best kind of environment you could have, because you're surrounded by a magical place, first of all. I mean, you're literally nurtured by nature around you. You're nurtured by the people who are there around you. You're nourished through the food that is there, that is available to you, that is, you know, both safe and challenging and supportive and all of the things, you know? Mm-hmm. And it means that it becomes this opportunity for healing that I can't quite see how else it would happen, you know, in their everyday lives.
I love that. It is such a unique experience because when folks join at least our retreat, everyone knows that you have an eating disorder. So you don't have to hide that, right? Or pretend everything is okay. Right? You can let yourself relax into the experience of nourishing yourself regularly and, oh, resting, being still, like connecting with nature, connecting with people who understand. I really love that. And you're right. It's not an environment that can be like really created elsewhere.
Yeah, it's really hard. And to an extent, what I also want to like bring up, I know this is not what you asked, but there's this like geeky part of me that loves the fact that we know that when we are in familiar environments, our brain is going to go into familiar patterns. That's normal. Like that's how we function as humans. And that means that when we're in unfamiliar environment, we're kind of automatically more open to learning and shifting certain things.
Yeah.
And that can be both amazing and really like dangerous and risky, right? Because if you are in an environment that is different but unsupportive, that could actually press a lot more of your buttons and your triggers, and you end up maybe going back to certain things that you thought were already behind you. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to get, you know, our little group of humans into a different environment, and we know that they're going to be like automatically, you know, because they're humans and not aliens or unicorns, even though our eating disorders try to make us believe that we're always the exception to everything. We know that they're going to be more open to stuff. So we know that we have this chance of planting so many little seeds and sharing data and information through our workshops. And you know, when I teach yoga, I know that I have this amazing opportunity to plant little seeds in their minds. And we know that they're in an environment where everything is going to support, you know, the fact that this little seed is protected and planted and is going to already have the time to grow a little bit before they go back into the world. And I feel like that really exponentially impacts. What am I trying to say? Like, it really makes it so that the growth, like the lessons learned, are exponentially bigger because they have been made in such an environment. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I completely hear you on that. I think that's why so many people go away on not just our retreat, but other retreats. And you hear them talk about these huge shifts they have or these transformative thoughts that finally sunk in or they finally hear their own truth. It's because they were given the right environment to slow down, seek inward, right? Understand themselves a little bit more and plant those seeds that need to be planted about like making that shift or making that change. So I think you're right with that. I think the environment does so much. It can be very magical.
And it's hard to find places, right, where we feel that we're safe enough that we can be brave and willing to show up and change things. Because, you know, as much as, for example, I had a supportive partner when I was in recovery, I'm still with someone who isn't trained. I'm still with someone who has their own wants and wishes and needs. And that means it's different, not out of, you know, my partner being mean or not supportive enough or whatever, but simply because life is life and that's okay, right? We're two humans traveling together. Whereas on a retreat like ours, that's not the case. You're literally held, you know, we're holding everyone in our hands and making sure that they're safe and that they're seen and heard and supported in all the ways that they need so that they can go back with so much more in themselves and in their souls and in the ways that they feel aligned with who they are and who they want to be. Also, I will say, I love retreats. I've always loved this place that we go to, and it holds a very special place in my heart. So I could talk for another hour about all the things, but probably should stop.
Well, that's amazing. What would you say to someone listening? Because we, you know, our retreat's coming up in June 5th through 10th. We're going to be out in Portugal. We have a few spots available, although it's filling up fast. What would you say to someone who's considering joining us?
Join sooner rather than later, because there might not be any spots left. I mean, you know, there are certain things that, you know, we need to be realistic here, right? So you need to be medically stable. You need to be at a spot, you know, in your own recovery where you are able to travel to meet us in Portugal, where you're able to eat flexibly enough that you don't need to have a very specific rigid meal plan that needs to be met, because we have like meals that are very family style. So, you know, those are realities. Other than that, really, I would encourage them to simply reach out to us. We have a little leaflet filled with information and testimonials. We have an entire blog post written on a participant's experience last year on our retreat. So there's plenty for anyone that's curious to read, to look at. And I know that both you and I are very much available to have a chat, to answer any questions. So I would encourage anyone to reach out, really.
I love it. Oh, thank you so much, Anne Claire. I'll put all those links in the show notes so listeners who want to join have the opportunity to do that. Anne Claire, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. How can listeners find you if they might want to work with you?
So my website is path2recovered.com. I am path2recovered on Instagram. I am the Megan and Claire Show on YouTube with you. And obviously, they can also find me in the Recovery Collective if they join us, because I'm over there too, teaching yoga and popping every once in a while in various workshops. So those are all the ways. And I'm sure you'll add links somewhere in those show notes as well. So yeah. And if they want to send me an email directly, that's hello@path2recovered.com.
Fabulous. Awesome, Anne Claire. Well, thanks again for being on the show. You are the best. And I'm just so grateful I get the chance to work with you all the time in all the little ways that we do. And thank you for sharing all these tips today.
Thank you, Meg, for having me. It's always an honor. And thank you for being the yin to my yang. You're the best work wife.
Thank you.
It is a lovely day every time that I see you.
So lovely. All right, Anne Claire. Bye.